take LAFC. Georgi Mihailovic, all emotion. That's what they brought him for.
Why not the Rapids? Why not?
I just felt like it was a little bit of a kick in the balls, to be honest.
It came a lot sooner than I thought that I would be the oldest player on the team.
That's all you got, brother. That's all you got.
The word of the day would have been hyper-realism.
We're bad at soccer, but we're good on a bagel.
Rabbi in red, talking the Rapids and turning heads, with questions from you and analysis, in your car, in your home, thank you for tuning to Holding the Highline.
Hello, Colorado Rapids fans, you are listening to Up the Pids with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard. It is Monday, August 19th, 2024. Moise Bombito to Nice is official. Jamie Vardy is trolling Tottenham Hotspur fans upon the return of the Premiership. And the U.S. men's national team is playing Mexico in Guadalajara in October. But none of this matters because the Rapids beat Club America and are through to the League's Cup semifinals and are two games away from their second ever trophy and one win away from qualifying from CONCACAF Champions 2025. Joining me now, a man who has never missed a goalkeeper penalty, Rabbi Mark Goodman.
Woo! We are 48 hours away from what happened, and I am still kind of high on the salty tears of Club America fans in the Holding the Highline and Burgundy Wave comment section on Twitter. Ooh, boy, that'll get you going in the morning. That is some exciting energy, like drinking in the pain of others. I mean, the reality, though, is we're drinking in the joy of ourselves. And for those of us who've been around this club for a long time, it has been a long time coming, and we deserve the joy and the happiness that we've reserved and earned at this moment. It's great stuff, Matt.
Mark, I'm still in shock, to be honest. Like I was talking to someone this morning, and I was saying, I'm fully expecting to like wake up, check my phone, and find out it's July 20th and it's the morning of the RSL third leg. The Rocky Mountain Cup final game. I did this morning against Barca. None of this happened. None of this was real. I'm continually in shock and awe with what this team has been able to do, Mark. They have continued to defy expectations that you and I have had very reasonable thoughts on throughout this season. And I'm not sure anybody thought that the Rapids would be here or could be here this time in February or March, other than maybe Chris Armas. And I want to believe somewhere in there, the Rapids have earned what they've done, no question about it. But I also want to believe that somewhere in there, the soccer gods, you know, were just tipping, you know, the scales of fate from an XG standpoint, just slightly in favor towards the Rapids. Club America's won a bunch of stuff and everything. It's been a lot of stuff due to the refs over the years. They're one of the super clubs and everything. You know, every single person who came back to the Rapids, Mark, in 2024 to embrace the suck a little bit more, the soccer gods said, you guys deserve a little bit of moment of joy. Here's that. Here's that against RSL. Here's that against LAFC at home, Moise Bombito scoring. Here's a bunch of money for Moise Bombito. Oh, and here, by the way, here, you get to beat Club America and go to the League's Cup semifinal. Absolutely fantastic. But yes, Mark, the Liga MX cope that we have seen, watching the evolution, Rabbi, of the greater Liga MX diaspora, the media, the fans, the player and staff reactions from the León game to where we are now with Club America has just been a total arc and everything, and to see like each fan base get progressively more angry and then respond to us negatively a little bit more. I mean, Mark, we turned to I'm not going to admit which one of us actually I'm not going to miss which one of us has actually tweeted anything, Mark, but to the extent that HTHL is capable of going dark, Brandon, like, we were straight up trolling them at this point. We were posting stuff that was going to be outrage clickbait, and boy did they buy it hook, line, and sinker. And Mark, you've got hydration for the rest of the year, and I'm pretty sure that all those Toluca fans, Mark, are the reason that the Colorado River hit a 7 or an 8 year high for its water level with all of their tears. And I'm just going to assume now, Rabbi, that the greater Los Angeles County is just not going to be in a drought for the next 5 years with how many Club America fans are still crying as they, you know, go on to LAX and the Bradley Terminal to then board an Air Mexicana flight back to Ciudad de Mexico.
Good stuff, man. No disagreements, no arguments here. It was also the kickoff of the English Premier League. That was also fun. Fulham got a win, yeah?
No, they lost to Manchester United.
Oh, that's right. It was you guys played the night game. You guys played the opening night game.
Yes.
And I couldn't watch Arsenal, which I complained about on the Twitter machine, because for once again, if it's on USA, it's not, or CNBC, it's not on Peacock, because why do I pay for Peacock? Apparently not for all the games. But anyways, I don't know. Maybe Matt didn't want to talk about this in the rundown. I'm not sure. We're going to talk about the Club America game. So I just feel like we should banter about whatever we're bantering about before we banter about the other things.
Did you see that? Speaking of people being salty and absolutely rubbing it in the face of other fans, Mark, did you see Jamie Vardy totally poop housing Tottenham fans?
I did not. What Jamie Vardy loves a party.
Yes,
he likes to chat SHIT and threaten people to get banged, so called. With that. But anyways, what happened, Matt?
Spurs were playing. Were hosting Leicester. It was their opening game in the Premier League, I believe. And Tottenham fans were chanting. I don't know which chant it was about Jamie Vardy. He's got a bunch of them. His wife has a bunch of them. They were chanting something, and so Jamie Vardy looks over towards the fans who are chanting it. He points to his shoulder to the actual Premier League logo and everything, and then he holds up the number 1, points to the Leicester crest, points to them, and then holds up the number 0, basically saying, "I've got a Premier League title. Tottenham doesn't. Like, you don't have a right to talk."
Oh, my God.
He then proceeds. I don't know where in the game this happened. It ended up being a draw. Vardy scored the goal to ultimately get the equalizer. So I don't know when this exchange would have happened. Was it scoreless? Did Tottenham just score? Was it before Leicester scored? Was it after Jamie Vardy celebrated his goal? I'm not sure on the context of that based on the video shared. But yeah, Jamie Vardy absolutely winding up. And Mark, he is a fantastic poophouser and a person who holds grudges and acts on them. I can think of a former Colorado Rapids striker who might be playing for LAFC on Wednesday who I'm concerned about in that regard. Mark, anything else Premier League, or do we actually want to talk about stuff happening in these United States in the Centennial State?
No, it's everything's golden. It's nice to be back. The Bundesliga didn't start this week. It starts next week. Serie A started this week, and I could watch all the games. Paramount is financially in great distress, so I think there's a non-zero chance that Matt, you and I could make a bid to be covering Serie A by the end of the week. You know, there's a lot of stuff that we've reached the magic season again. I think it's always important to note the beginning of those days in our lives, which is it lasts for like about 2 months a year, the best times where you can just wake up on a Saturday morning and start watching soccer at in your neck of the woods. It's about 6 o'clock in the morning, and keep watching soccer until about 11 o'clock at night, with like maybe a 2 hour break in the middle. It's really ideal, especially if there's a good soccer bar in town that also has a good kitchen, so that you can have breakfast and then get drunk, and then have lunch and then get drunk, and then have dinner and then get drunk. We call that the full Richard Terry, for those of you who are not familiar. By the way, Matt, have you ever been around Richard Terry when he's been on one of these Saturday EPL MLS doubles where he goes on a full-on like 11-hour bender?
If it was not for Rapids Media, Mark, I would have joined him on one of those. But I don't know if I've actually... I've said this to you, Mark. I don't know that I've actually said this out loud on the podcast before. The first time that I ever met Richard was at a random soccer house, whatever. I had no idea. We had interacted on Twitter. I didn't know who he was. He knew exactly who I was because I'm a public-facing person, and I write about soccer, and I had a podcast. And he said, you're so-and-so, whatever. Oh, after this, we're going to the Bulldog and everything. Fancy a pint? Mark, we were there for last call. It was literally me and Richard Terry there for last call. So, yes, I have... I unknowingly...
I feel the pain of your liver right now. I know what that was like.
I met Richard Terry, and he asked me one question, which I thought was simply, do you want to go have one singular more beer at the soccer bar down the street? And little did I know, I was consenting to Dare to Terry, and I do not Dare to Terry very often anymore.
Phenomenal.
Mark, earlier today, listeners, at 10:45 a.m. Mountain Time exactly, the Colorado Rapids confirmed the transfer of Generation Adidas center back Moise Bombito to Olympic Gymnast Club de Nice. Listeners, if you have not heard it already, I had a whole thing prepped for this because we knew for about a week that it was happening. And so I compiled a series of interviews from Moise from his time at the club with really kind of poignant topics or interviews that took place during interesting times for him at the club. And I put that in the podcast feed. So that is the most recent episode on HDHL's feed. If you have not listened to it, I would encourage you to do so. We start off with the first interview that he ever did with a member outside of the club. And that was with me the day after the super draft when they drafted him. There's a bunch of stuff in there from one-on-one interviews I've done with him, other group interviews. There's a press conference in there as well. And the club did a really fantastic thing. Listeners, they set it up to where Moise actually got to have a proper exit interview with members of the media. And so we got to speak to him knowing that the deal was ultimately done. And the club was able to set that up absolutely last minute. And that was all on the record. And they allowed me to include it in that. Super fantastic. Thank you to the club for setting that up, for making it happen, and for allowing us to share that in its entirety. So go back and listen to that. There are timestamps in the show notes of that episode that show what interviews are where. The last 15, 17-ish minutes are Moise's actual exit interview. Super nostalgic, super emotional, super sentimental, very in line with all the other stuff that both clubs have put out. The Rapids social media has put out a bunch of stuff as well from Moise that I think is really sentimental and commemorating his time at the club. And Rabbi, if you've not seen it already, Nice did a really wonderful, emotional announcement video with Moise signing with the team as well. So go ahead and check that out on OGC Nice's various social media platforms. But so, Mark, the only other two things that I have to say, we spoke for, what, I think it was 20, 25 minutes about the Moise transfer last week when it was you and me on the pod. Listeners, I want to reiterate the numbers that are out there that Fabrizio Romano and Tom Bogert originally reported as far as the transfer fee and the sell-on clause, I continue to believe are very, very accurate. And furthermore, listeners, I have it on very good authority that it is not a sliding scale for the for a sell-on clause, but it is a firm, entirely in place 20% sell-on clause. So, Mark, I think, you know, we talked about 10 to 20% would have been good. And I think I said on this podcast last week that for all the other conditions, it was 15%. Warwick Smith would have been dumb to not say yes to that. A 20% sell-on clause, Mark, if Moise is as good as we think he's going to be and everything, like if he gets sold for $15 million, Mark, and hits some of those performance incentives, which I have to assume, Rabbi, as a center back, aren't going to probably be goal-related. Mark, I don't know if you've heard, I feel like at least within MLS, the most typical performance incentive is appearances and then like something tied to their position. So clean sheets for goalkeepers, goals for goal scorers, attacking midfielders, maybe assists as well. I have to imagine that most of those performance incentives are some combination of minutes played or appearances in certain competitions. Or maybe, you know, if Moise plays a certain number of games and the team qualifies for this European competition. So it's like that. So Mark, if Moise is a starter for Nice and he plays really well and then he makes a move to a bigger club or one of the bigger leagues, I would say France is the fifth if we're talking about the big five. So Germany, Spain, Italy, or England, then this is going to be a huge, significant financial windfall, even all the other stuff that we had. And that extra 5%, Mark, that extra 5, 10% to go from 10 or 15% to 20% on the sell-on clause, fantastic business, and I'm here for it. And Mark, I think we're all officially OGC Nice fans. Rabbi, your thoughts on Moise's transfer becoming official and any other thoughts that you've had since last week?
Nothing new. I mean, I'm a little worried about how it affects the Rapids going forward. He's our best center back, but I do think it's a good bit of business. I think the new thing that I can add going into this is it is a bummer that he's going to the French league, which is maybe the league that I watch the least of. Nice is not in the Champions League this year. I don't know if they're in
Europa League qualifier, I believe. Let me fact check.
Oh, so if they're in Europa, there's a good chance that I might catch a couple matches. The bummer for me is that Tuesday's my day off, so that means that's when I get to watch Champions League matches. But you know, like maybe there's a way that I could tune in a couple games, but just, you know, kind of following him passively from a distance will be fine. Apparently he just recently joined Twitter, so that's kind of cool. So maybe we'll be able to kind of like follow in on his exploits that way.
@MoiseBombito1. So, Mark, I think it's noteworthy I want to believe Moise is going to go about social media from a healthy standpoint. He's already done that with how he reacted to the racial abuse. But Mark, I think it is worth, it's noteworthy and a bit ironic that somebody, you know, that a professional athlete who's black gets racially abused on Instagram and then decides that the platform that I'm going to move to or interact to is the, you know, burning hellscape that is X.
Yeah.
But I can confirm, listeners, Nice is in the league phase for, yes, they're in the group stage, if you will excuse me, for for Europa League this year. So it's like them, Olympiacos, Real Sociedad, Manchester United's in there. So they will be in the group stage, Mark. There's some other play-in rounds that need to happen. So I don't think that the group draw has actually happened, but presumably that'll happen in the next couple months. And maybe we'll get to see Moise play in Europa League, because I do believe, Mark, I want to say that Sam Vines did play in Europa League with Antwerp. We know that he didn't play in Champions League because of the clerical error, reported clerical error on that. But yeah, I'd love to see Moise play in Champions League with Nice next year, because they do well in Europa League and because he does well starting for them in Ligue 1.
Good stuff.
Anything else Moise related, Mark, or shall we move on to, dare I say, Rabbi, the biggest game in Colorado Rapids history since 2016? And yes, I'm saying this is bigger than Pittsgiving.
We should definitely talk about that, but yes, let's get to it.
Listeners, this past Saturday at the Diggity in Carson, California, the Colorado Rapids played at Club America in what was functionally a home game for Club America. Announced attendance was 22,426, and Mark, it looked like a late 90s LA Galaxy home game with how much yellow and blue we were seeing in the stands. But yes, a Club America home game. Club America comes out in a 4-2-3-1. Mark, I saw Henry Martin up top. I saw Brian Rodriguez, who I remember scoring goals for LAFC, several against the Rapids, and I was scared. I saw Jonathan Dos Santos in the middle of a midfield three, and I was concerned. Colorado Rapids made two changes from the lineup that beat Toluca. Omir Fernandez was in for Calvin Harris at the right wing position, and then Connor Ronan was in for Oliver Larraz to play alongside Cole Bassett in the double pivot in a 4-2-3-1. Mark, game comes out and there's a really good energy, and I thought the Rapids were pressing well and trying to do stuff well in transition. I thought Club America grew into the game as the half went on and eventually started to apply pressure. They had, I believe it was 15 shots, but none on goal in the first half, Mark, and a lot of that was Club America getting into a really, really good area and the ball falling to Brian Rodriguez and him shooting completely inaccurately. Diego Valdez as well, also, Mark, had a bunch of opportunities and wasn't able to finish. He actually had some shots on goal. Brian Rodriguez, listeners, had the accuracy of an Imperial Stormtrooper shooting at someone with the last name Skywalker. That's how much of a bad game that he was having. And so the Rapids were there, Mark, and they were kind of surviving it. You had that really bad turnover by Keegan Rosenberry when they got pressed that led to a chance for Brian Rodriguez, but they got in halftime, they caught their breath and everything. And I thought we saw the second half for me against Club America was the best game plan and the best execution of a game plan of the Rapids playing on the road against a great team, being deferential to them or acknowledging their quality, playing against that quality, and then trying to do something with that. So bending a lot, not breaking, ceding a certain amount of possession, absorbing pressure, allowing for the opponent to create chances, but then having really good principles of play in terms of adapting that and putting it in situations where ultimately it was somebody getting a bad shot that was easily blocked or was going to go wide or was easily going to be saved. Cole Bassett had that really good chance, Mark, in transition where Andres Maxu sets him up off of the press and he ends up shooting it just over the bar. Cole had another really good chance off of the press. I thought Colorado did a really good job of making Club America uncomfortable in possession. And then it just came down, Mark, to whether or not Club America was finally going to cause the Rapids dam to break. It did not, spoiler alert. And whether or not Colorado was going to get one of their fewer number of opportunities, but for me, higher quality opportunities and able to convert them. Ultimately, nobody was able to do that. And we ended up going to penalties, where the first miss, I believe, was Rafael Navajo. Let me scroll here, Mark, because the feed, the way that MLS Soccer does it, is a little bit weird. So Cole made and Georgie made. Those were 2-1. Navajo had his shot saved by Maragon off of a kick save with with Hoffa trying to go up the middle and the trailing leg being able to stop that. A bunch more penalties were scored, but then it was Igor Lisovsky, the Uruguayan, I believe, that Zach Steffen was able to save, Mark. Ultimately, we end up going to extra time of penalties. Everybody's making a mark. They're doing really, really good. And then we get to the 10th round, and I'm fully expecting, oh, it's going to be Lalas Abubakar and the one Club America guy who hasn't taken it. But, Mark, there was some finger-pointing and everything, and Zach Steffen was a little bit confused. And normally we don't get goalkeeper penalties until the 10th round, until the 11th round, Mark. We got it in the 10th. One of my favorite things, Rabbi, is goalkeeper penalties. I love goalkeeper penalties, and I love baseball games where both teams run out of relievers and you have to put a field player on there, just throw up softballs and just absolutely get jacked by Shohei Ohtani or whomever. So you have Zach Steffen show up and he smashes it down the middle against Maragon, Mark, and I was expecting that it was going to be the final field player for Club America to take it, but Maragon, like, you know, accepted the challenge. You know, he wasn't, you know, he wanted that smoke, and he shoots it wide, and the Rapids get out of it, and they get out of penalties, and they win. Mark, I've been talking for way too long. You go. Good thing, excited thing, you know, random hysteria.
No, you said it really well. This was a wild game in that Club America did look a little bit better than the Rapids on a couple occasions. I think they hit the post twice in the first half. And those were like, woo, like very kind of crazy moments. When we did the preview of this game, I kind of talked about them playing a very fluid total football kind of version of a 4-2-3-1. And if you look, the lineup that was listed at the beginning of the game was a Christmas tree 4-3-2-1. And it never looked like that. It kind of like constantly looked like a 4-3-3 morphing into a 4-4-2, but then there's that one guy and he's way out of position, but that guy's always out of position. There's always one guy out of position. There was just this very weird thing. And then on the other end, the Rapids were just kind of like, there was a really great observation by Tyler Terrens, or the color commentator at some point, that was basically that the Rapids were playing their 4-2-3-1, but in many cases, one of the defensive midfielders was just dropping between the lines to be the fifth in kind of a five back. Mm-hmm. And in the first half, we kind of saw that kind of like dipping in to kind of settle out. And there were kind of like four on the back line, and then one kind of either the right back or the left back kind of pressing up to the side that was ball side and meeting the ball. So there was always kind of like one man on point. There was also, I don't know if you noticed, Matt, Cole Bassett was kind of playing a lot of man defense in this game. He was kind of following the number 10 or the number 9, like one-on-one for long stretches of this game. It was very different than any other Rapids match I've watched this year. In the second half, particularly, especially after 65, but even in the first half after like minute 30, 35, the Rapids were playing effectively a 5-4-1 in defense. You know, they were five at the back. They were very, 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 very debunkered and deep. It wasn't very tight. It wasn't like they weren't running these like very kind of precise lines like you see in the English Premier League. They were kind of fluid. Like, they kind of recognized that Club America was gonna kind of dip and dodge and flow and move. And the Rapids lines kind of dipped and dodged a little bit too. I was really nervous in the first 20 minutes because the back line of the Rapids did not feel like it was totally solid. It looked at times like, and this is a thing that I've also watched Lalas Abubakar do for 3 or 4 years, Abubakar would drop the line a little bit.
Yeah.
And I sometimes was worried that he was, and if you don't understand what I'm talking about, these are terms for kind of those who were like not familiar, not big on soccer tactics, to kind of go ahead and Google this. But Lalas Abubakar was so-called dropping the line. He was playing a little bit deeper, and that meant that he was playing a guy onside. He was allowing that player to kind of stay onside, which made me worried. But it worked fine, and he played just fine. And the entire back line should be commended. I thought this was one of Maxo's best games at center back. I thought he had a number of really great clearances. There were all these... last thing I'll say, because I've talked a lot now, there were all these moments where Club America was bending in a ball. There was also this play that they ran over and over and over again, which was they would kind of start in the center back position. They would flip it to the left mid, and then the left mid would hit a long diagonal cross to the right winger, and that guy would be open because they just switched the field really well, and they settled the ball really well. And they'd have this open guy who would kind of dribble in, and then Sam Vines would cut him off as best he could. Sometimes it was a little bit of an overreaction. He felt a little bit out of pace. The ball would get cut back across the field, or there would be a short, very weak little popped kind of like cross to the back post. And every time it happened, Matt, it happened like 5 times. And like my lungs just, I could feel that like the oxygen in the room had just been sucked out like an airlock. And I was just like, oh, we're conceding right here. It happened like 5 times. And every single time, either Maxo or Lawless or Connor Ronan or Keegan Rosenberry cleared the ball off the line and just booted it out. It happened a ton in this game that the Rapids like cleared the ball from not only within the 18-yard box, but I'm talking like within the 6. It was like terrifying. And they did that a lot, and it worked really well. I wouldn't prefer to experience a game like that too frequently. It did feel like we weren't the stronger team for long stretches. But, and my final thought is this, this was the kind of throwbackety game that goes back to the Pablo Mastroeni years. Yes. I knew you were thinking that while you were watching the game. Like, we had a full-on Vulcan mind meld, which was, there were moments in this game where, like, I felt like Chris Armas went in and said, defend for your lives, right? Draw strict lines, kill off the game, clear the ball, tackle like your life depends on it, and we'll see how we go. And they did it for like 90 minutes. It was a different side of a Rapids team that was often has often been the more offensive team. I did not believe that this team, as constituted, was capable of playing this way. It really showed versatility. It showed a little bit of luck, but that's okay. We've been a little bit lucky against Toluca. We were a little bit lucky against León in spots. Like, you know, this team, that's the way soccer works, which is, if you rise to the challenge and you play your best game and you get a little luck, you can beat anyone on any given day. And the Rapids did. I didn't even comment on the penalty kickoff, but I will say one thing, which goes all the way back to a comment you made at the very beginning of the podcast, which is, this is going to rank amongst the 5 biggest victories the Colorado Rapids have ever had in club history. That's thing one. But the situation isn't as big because it's, you know, a quarterfinal as opposed to a cup or a semifinal. But and I said this on Twitter, but for those of you who are not on Twitter, 1, good for you. And 2, because you're not wasting time like I am. And 2, here's the comment. This is probably the biggest club this team has ever played, like without a doubt. Like, you know, the Arsenal game. Arsenal is technically a bigger club, but of course, we all know that game didn't mean anything. Because it was an off-season friendly. This was a meaningful trophy game with a real top-notch club. I mean, remember, you watched this too, Matt, when they flashed the graphic, the Chiron, at the beginning of the game, where it showed the two clubs and said their beginning years and how many trophies they'd won. And it was like, Rapids, 1 trophy, founded in 1995. Club America, founded in 1972. 7 trophies. And I was like, meh, it's kind of scary. But, you know, they're not getting 8, and their 8th trophy won't be leagues. They won't be getting the League's Cup this year.
I'm not sure what that graphic was referring to, saying it was the 1970s mark. According to their Wikipedia page, it was 1916. I thought it was 1946 for some reason.
Yeah, but
the top of my head,
Liga MX has only been around since 1972. So that, okay. I'm making that up off the top of my head. That's what I remember. But you know, you can tell me. They really are from 1916. So that's a good
maybe
question.
Maybe originally, Mark. Where's the...
What was the Mexican League before Liga MX? This is like that whole Premier League when the Premier League... You know, because the Premier League started in 1992. So by my logic, Arsenal started in 1992 because the Premier League started in 1992. So yeah. I apologize to all you Club America fans. However, none of you are actually listening to this podcast now for right
We're
now.
We're so sorry for getting the facts around your small tin
I just make them up.
Club wrong because your goalkeeper can't make a penalty.
Yikes.
Please tweet at us and
send hate mail to Matt Pollard at
Rapids96podcast@gmail.com. And please continue to flood our comments so that the algorithm thinks that we're posting good stuff and gets us more views on social media. Please keep doing that. We will gladly report all of the P words that you post on us. There were some graphic things being tweeted at us as well, Mark. I will not elaborate on that verbally, but I think all of them have been deleted and reported as far as
we are indeed pinche gringos, and we're okay with it. I am a pinche gringo. I am fine with that.
Okay. In any case, Mark, so domestically, they have won the Primera Division 15 times. I don't know if that's separating the Clausura and the Apertura. They've won the Copa MX 6 times, and of course, they've won the CONCA Champions 7 times, and that is the most that anyone has won the various variations of the CONCACAF Champions League. So to your point, Mark, I will agree with you unquestionably. In a competitive game, this is the biggest club that the Rapids have ever played. Club America, for me, is the biggest club on the continent. They're bigger than, you could say, with what they've done in terms of having players on their team. I think there's maybe an argument for the Galaxy, given what they had with David Beckham. Miami, they need to win some silverware that's not Leagues Cup to have them.
Right.
But I don't think there's any question,
right,
like the like in any given year, who's really good, who's likely to win domestically, internationally. Whereas
like
if a European...
10 years ago, you could make a shout for Chivas, but Chivas has been totally irrelevant for the last like 15 years in the Mexican League, and Club America has been totally dominant. And this is the team of the 2000s.
Club
in
America,
North America
is the Real Madrid of North America. I would say the LA Galaxy are the Manchester United of North America. So
I love that analogy.
So I don't think there's any question, Mark. This is the biggest team the Rapids have ever played. This is the biggest team that the Rapids have ever beaten.
For sure. And by the way, I found out today, they have played Club America before. They played Club America in a friendly in July 15th of 2009 at DSGP. 2009? Anyways. But yeah, I found in the deep recesses of the internet proof that they had played
what was
a friendly.
The score?
Nil-nil. It ended nil-nil. Yeah.
Club America, you're such a small club that you've come, you've
never
played the
scored
Rapids,
against
played
the Rapids
twice,
Rapids,
and you've never scored a goal. See, oh, it's the, oh, well, if this had been an altitude. You came to Dick's Sporting Goods Park in July of 2009 before the Rapids had even won a trophy, and you could not even score a goal on small little Colorado Rapids. How big truly are you, Club America? Zach Steffen is su padre. Okay.
By the way, the goalkeeper that night was Colorado goalkeeper legend Preston Burpo.
Oh,
Preston Burpo.
Jason Maxwell is nodding his head in approval. Okay, where were we? Oh, yeah, actually, I guess the other question that we have, Mark, I'm willing to say I think it's bigger than Pidsgiving for me personally. I would overweigh the competitive aspect to it. And as big as it was to be on primetime on a national holiday with the media there and everything, fundamentally, it was your first playoff game in a singular playoff game. It wasn't a semifinal. It matters what round you were in. Playing, you know, a Christmas Day NBA game is not as important as game 7 of a first round. So on that level, I would say I would barely put that over for 2001. Do I say it's bigger? Mark, do we say it's bigger than the two-leg series with Seattle in 2016? The only game that I can think that you could argue is bigger, the only two games that you could argue that were the bigger games in Rapids history for me, Mark, I would say are the two MLS Cup finals, 97 at DC at RFK, and then 2010 against FC Dallas, because MLS Cup is still the most important trophy to everyone in the MLS ecosystem and in domestic American soccer. I would say it's bigger than the U.S. Open Cup final against the Rochester Raging Rhinos because they were an A-League team, American Soccer League team, not A-League as in Australia, to be clear. But yeah, I would say I could see Rapids fans, next time I see you at the tailgate, talk to me, and I could be convinced of the game against Seattle at home where you win, you host MLS Cup in 2016 being bigger. I will not be convinced that this game against...
I would just add to the list. I'm not sure. I don't have a ranking, but I would add to the list the game that got them to the Seattle series, which was the penalty shootout with Tim Howard. Not Tim Howard. No, was that the next year? It was 20. What am I remembering? whenever it was
against LA Galaxy.
LA Galaxy 2016. Yeah. It was Tim Howard. Yeah. That game. Yeah, that would, I would put that on the list too. That was a big game.
I'll say the two MLS Cup finals, this game against Club America. Okay, top six, because we're over our limit.
Say, yeah,
I'll say the Galaxy one, the Seattle one, because that was it, and then two MLS Cup finals, the two game playoff games in 2016, Club America, and then Pidsgiving in 2021. And then I would say, if we're putting a seventh, if I'm putting a ranking to it, you're not assigning a ranking here, Rabbi, I would then say the Open Cup final, against
Rochester. So we just need to make a definitive list of the final of three more important games in Rapids history. We've got that really clickable, you know, all-time evergreen content of like the 10 biggest games in Colorado Rapids history. Although the reality is, they're, you know, we might need to wait two games to see what they are, because they've got two games coming up potentially. They've got, if they can beat LAFC and they can beat the team after them, which is either Philadelphia or Columbus, which I will announce on this podcast right now. It's not 100%, but I'd say it's 80%, as long as my wife lets me. In the event that the final will be held in either Columbus or Philadelphia and the Rapids somehow get past LAFC, I will plan to go to that game, because Philly's only 5 hours away by car and Columbus is only 3 hours away by car. So, folks, you may have a representative of the podcast in the press booth asking Chris Armas, you know, all the questions about what it's like to win a trophy for the Colorado Rapids for the first time in 14 years.
All right. Mark,
I'm getting ahead of ourselves, though, aren't
yes.
we? Yes. A little Mark, bit.
This was, Mark, this was a historic side quest to me talking about good things.
Such nerds.
So there was a really good quote that Chris Armas had, Mark, about he made a really good analogy in the post-game media availability that playing these bigger Mexican teams is like having a poor man's blanket. So it's like too small of a blanket, and so you want to pull it up to cover your head so your head's warm, and then your feet get exposed. And then you pull the blanket down to then be able to cover your feet, and then the top of you is cold. And so he described that in that was kind of the game plan of the Rapids weren't going to be able to have 100% coverage. What could they do to limit Club America in those good areas? How could they force them to metaphorically making their feet cold, if you will? And that just so happened to be, Mark, to getting the ball to letting them force the ball to Diego Valdez to then shoot the ball in an accurate way. So to your point about all the concerns about what the Rapids were doing defensively, I would almost argue this was a Sean Dice style forcing the opponent into taking a bad shot, and one that they're totally planned for, and one, Mark, that they reacted really well to. I thought it was a very good job in terms of the players understanding the principles of play and what they had to do in individual moments. And okay, you could say, I say emergency defending, Mark. I say one guy has to make one play, and if he doesn't, the opponent scores a goal. Zach Steffen has to shoot a ball that's through him, and it's either he saves it or it gets past him. Lalo Zubibagar has to block a shot that's from an angle where Zach Steffen's not in a good position, and if he doesn't block it, it's probably a goal or another danger situation. Just because that's an emergency situation, Mark, or a thing that you have to do, otherwise you concede a goal, does not mean that the defense failed or that wasn't the game plan to begin with. And so I think there was a lot of that the Rapids were forcing Club America into those situations. And then it was just about a guy making a simple play, really just standing in front of the guy about to shoot and then making sure that you block the ball, as Keegan Rosenberry was turning into Scott Sterling in many ways. And so in that regard, Mark, I thought it was really well done. And Chris Armas finished that quote with the analogy about the poor man's blanket, saying, what was it? Tonight we had a good game plan. I think I'm glad the boys brought it to life. And it was so well executed, Mark, and so well drilled. I almost want to say that it was a carryover from what they did against Toluca. And I will say this right now, Mark, as well. I've been harping on the quote about what was going wrong defensively earlier in the season, and the quote from Keegan Rosenberry that said that part of soccer is thinking collectively, and they weren't doing a good job of that in those emergency defensive situations. The Colorado Rapids thought collectively against Toluca defensively, and especially against Club America. Mark, let's talk about penalties. Rabbi, I'm ready to say it. I think this is who Zach Steffen is. I think we've seen enough from him in big games where he's had to make big saves, or even where he hasn't had a lot to do, he's had to do it in big moments. And it's one thing if you do it once against Club León and maybe they aren't prepped and everything, Mark. You've done it four times, and four times where you don't have a lot of time in order to prep for those things. And this is coming off of him having, I think, a better June and a much better July, even when the team was conceding goals. This is a far cry. We're 3-4 months from when things were really bad in April and things were, and the team was scoring, but his post shot XG, that stat that you and I and Matt Doyle have harped on, was a problem in May. Club America listeners had an expected goals in the 90 minutes of 1.6, and Colorado Rapids had one of 0.05. So Zach Steffen should have let in at least a goal, possibly two. He ended up not letting in zero. Mark, I think this is the best that he's looked from a shot stopping side since he was with Columbus Crew, probably. And I think, Rabbi, at this point, like, if we're looking at, you know, Mauricio Pochettino getting announced as the new coach of the U.S. men's national team at the senior level later this week, probably, and that being a clean slate for all players, like, Zach Steffen is starting. He's playing well, and okay, he's playing for the lowly Colorado Rapids in Major League Soccer, but he's coming off of big performances in big wins against quality Mexican opposition. If I told you in 2 years, Mark, that this Toluca team was going to continue to build and win the CONCACAF champions, I'd be like, that makes sense. You could tell me that Club America is going to win three trophies between now and CONCACAF champions next year, and I'd be like, yeah, that would make sense. None of these other USMNT guys, who albeit are at bigger clubs in bigger leagues making more money, Mark, are starting regularly. This is the best team we've seen from Zach Steffen as a member of the Colorado Rapids. There's a possibility this might be who he is with the Colorado Rapids. He could be getting back to the version of himself that won goalkeeper of the year in 2018. And I think it is worth Mauricio Pochettino looking up and watching some YouTube highlights of him in penalties and wondering, should I call this guy in to my three goalkeeper squad for friendlies in October? I think we're getting to that point if we are not already there. Mark, any bad things that you want to say other than your previous concerns and, you know, your heart jumping into your throat as far as the defending and urgency moments?
I don't know that I've ever seen a Rapids game where it's been a while where I would say there's no bad things, because they had an idea. It was a little on the defensive side, but it worked. And it was probably, I mean, considering how quality Club America are and how good this team was, it was probably the right tactic on the day. I think the biggest challenge of there's no bad thing, but I'm just saying, as we look forward to LAFC, and I'll say it again when we do the preview of that game, the biggest challenge going forward is they may have to roll out this almost identical strategy one more time against LAFC in a hostile game in Los Angeles against the club with a tremendous amount of quality.
Have to run it back in the final against Columbus as well, Mark. The Colorado Rapids are going to simultaneously win the 2024, I didn't say this. I tweeted this out, Mark. I'm putting it to a vote. Holding the high line, our official position is that the Colorado Rapids won the 2024 Apertura. Yes?
We won it. That's right. Yes. We've beaten four Mexican teams in a row. Nobody else is really capable. Get on our level. Nobody else in Mexico can handle this. Bring on Chivas! Bring on Monterrey!
Well, they're small clubs compared to Club America at this point, Mark. Okay. I saying?
Matt's trying to find trying to open all new demographics of Mexican fans to hate on us. It's like, is there a city in Mexico that we haven't offended? You know, you didn't offend any of the Mazatlan fans, Matt. You know, that's an opportunity for you. Jaguares, I think, have been relegated, and you could still offend them if you want to.
So, Rabbi, I still think it is worth pointing out. I realize that I'm about to turn. I'm going to be a killjoy in a few different moments in the next couple minutes, Mark. I'm going to rehash. Club America had 1.6 XG. Colorado had 0.5. This was the fourth straight game against the Mexican opposition, Mark, in which functionally in the final 10 minutes, the game was still up for grabs. It could have gone either way. This was another coin flip game that the Rapids ended up winning. And so while this is a magical run, while they've done so much good stuff, while they've had so much confidence, how much of this, Mark, is maybe not something that would have been repeatable, or not something that is going to be repeatable this week in two games against three quality MLS teams, all on the road? Both of them are going to be on the road, listeners, to be clear. I don't know if we've said this, actually. So, listeners, the semifinals are on the 21st of August, both of them. And then there is a third place game Wednesday. And then the final is on Saturday, as is the third place
Sunday.
Game. There's the finals on Sunday?
Sunday.
The 25th. Okay. So what was I saying here? So in any case, listeners, there is a third place game. So no matter what, the Colorado Rapids are playing two games this week. We know it'll be against LAFC, and then TBD on the date and the what is up for grabs and who the opponent is, but it will either be at Columbus or at Philadelphia, and it'll either be on Saturday or Sunday, and it'll either be a final or a third place game. So getting back to my point, Mark, I don't know that the Rapids have two more coin flips going up and coming up heads, coming up Millhouse, for the Rapids to continue to play this way, playing close games in games in which the underlying numbers suggest that they are not the best team and get a result, especially when they're going to come up against three teams that have much more familiarity about them than the Mexican opponents, because it'll be two games against MLS opposition. So that's still something that I'm worried about. That's something, Mark, that I don't think will be repeatable for the Rapids come MLS Cup playoff times. Granted, I don't think they'll be playing exactly this way come the MLS Cup playoffs as well. The only other real bad thing that I have, Mark, you know, we've talked about the defense. It would have been nice to see the team be a little bit more clinical in some of their transition moments. You know, Calvin Harris had an opportunity. Cole Bassett had two close calls. And then Cole set up Ollie later on in the second half as well. I can forgive any of those individually, but a little bit more composure in front of goal, Mark. And I think the Rapids could have gotten their noses in front and then built some confidence and maybe won this game in regular time. But from a penalty standpoint, Mark, the one miss that the Rapids did have, they made 9 of their 10, was Rafael Navajo, who took the third PK. And this isn't the first penalty that he's missed, Mark. He missed a couple going into then him being switched out for Georgi Mihailovic and Cole Bassett. He did make his penalty against Club León. So he's 1-1 if we're talking about in League's Cup play. But there's a part of me, Mark, that's wondering, is that an issue for Navajo? Is this something that is just random chance and this happens and plenty of good strikers go through these moments? Or how much of his PK success and being automatic came down to that stutter step move that he had maybe perfected? And then goalkeepers got to see that a few times in MLS play. They started anticipating, scouting it, and preparing for it. That then allowed them to make saves in MLS PKs that he was taken, and then maybe this is another example of that, because he's had to change it up, Mark, because on the León penalty and then on the Club America penalty, he didn't do the stutter step run up. So maybe is Rafael Navajo is he still a good PK taker, and was he a victim of the success of the Rapids in drawing penalties? Was he a victim of the fact that he got so many of those PKs that people got game film on him, that now they figured him out and he had a really good fastball? He doesn't have a really good second pitch, but it just so happens that he had to use his fastball more earlier on in the season because of how many penalties the Rapids were winning and how many of those PKs that he were taking. I'm not prepared to say that that's a problem just yet. I do think it's still a relatively small sample size, but it's something that I'm curious about. And it's something that I am potentially going to be nervous about come another critical penalty that Navajo has to take in league play, in a shootout situation, either in League's Cup or in the playoffs. Not a bad thing. It's something I'm watching. Any other stuff, Mark? Or I've got a few big things that I want to talk about.
I think I've shot my shot. These Rapids are incredibly impressive. I definitely think that we have. There's more for this team to do. They're not done for the season. They definitely are not going to kind of flame out. But this team has accomplished everything I would have ever wanted them to in 2024 and more so. And I think that that's just a really wonderful thing to acknowledge right now before we have any moments, you know, a month or two now from now when we're like, oh, they've lost two games in a row. I'm so disappointed. Like, no whining, no crying in baseball. This is a great Rapids team. We should enjoy this moment and be high on it forever. And if we can't be high on the joy, then, as I said at the beginning, we should be high on the salty tears of Club America.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We haven't said this out loud yet, Mark, but rest in peace to Billy Bean, the founder of Moneyball and the longtime
front office. No. Wrong Billy Bean. You're thinking of Bill. Yeah, Bill Bean, the guy who died was a diversity trainer and coach for the LA Dodgers. He was Bill Bean, not Billy Bean. So.
I'm completely off on this.
Yeah, I love that you said that. You may want to scrub this from the record.
No, we're leaving it in. Good stuff. We're leaving it in.
Leaving it in.
listeners, I apologize for suggesting that Billy Bean had died. Long live Billy Bean, especially Mark, since I think there's arguments behind what he did with Moneyball was then part of the inspiration for what the Rapids way has been, and Porrick Smith's approach to analytics and building other sports teams.
Moneyball lives.
Yes. Okay. So, I mean, I think we've acknowledged the Rapids part of things as well, Rabbi. So I think we said that. I want to talk about the Liga MX cope, Mark, or the dialogue that we're now seeing from Liga MX fans. Listeners, last year, just one of the four semifinalists in League Cup was a Mexican team. I don't remember who it was. I think it was Monterrey. Don't quote me on that. They had to play at Philadelphia in the third place game, and Philly absolutely whomped them. So the top three finishers for the tournament last year were three MLS teams. The top four finishers in Leagues Cup this year will all be MLS teams. And so we've seen, Mark, from the rhetoric, as we've seen from the HTHL comments of boasting and puffing your chest out about beating a Mexican team, we've seen lots of excuses. We've seen lots of dialogue. And I just find it incredibly, it's refreshing on some level, Mark, to hear players, coaches, media members, fans acknowledge the realities of having to go on the road in unfamiliar environments against teams that you haven't played before and struggling in those moments and doing it in preseason. So it's nice to see Liga MX fans acknowledge that. I think it's incredibly ironic that for the past, 10 years where Mexican teams have absolutely dominated CONCACAF Champions League over MLS opposition, had no time for that excuse, especially when, in a lot of cases, those games that MLS teams were playing, there's a decent chance in many years during with the way the schedule lined up to where MLS teams would actually be playing their first CONCACAF Champions League game on a Wednesday before the start of league play. The Rapids did this, Mark, against, they had their home leg against Toronto FC, the big chill at DSGP, where you tried to go get a beer and got frozen beer taps. That happened midweek against Toronto, and then the Rapids then proceeded to play the following Saturday at New England Revolution. So, and Liga MX teams, most of them played four games. I think there were some teams that played a fifth game in the Apertura before starting this league play. So it's refreshing to see Liga MX teams acknowledge the complexity of travel, the complexity of playing in different environments in the United States that they're not familiar with because they're familiar with Mexican environments. I think it's incredibly ironic and hypocritical that these fan bases, these members of the media, these coaches coming out and making boisterous stadiums in their opening statements, like, have pretty much ignored this or called it a lame excuse or a cope and then gone on to assert that because Mexican teams dominate in Champions League, that is further affirmation that they are far better than MLS and that Mexican soccer is far better than American soccer. And so, you know, I think it's great to see this humble pie get served, Mark. And I want to believe as years continue to go on, I don't think Leagues Cup is going anywhere, albeit I'm upset about that personally with my views politically about the competition and about what it means for MLS teams playing in the Open Cup. But if we continue to see more Leagues Cup games and this format continue, Mark, and still have the tournament mostly played in the United States, people at The Athletic have reported that there was an option. Liga MX teams were given the option to discuss whether or not the tournament was going to alternate, being hosted in the United States, being hosted in Mexico. And they said no to playing in Mexico because they wanted more money. So I think it was the Juarez coach, Mark, who came out and acknowledged that the competition was unfair because of how much travel they had to go through. And even though they were a higher seeded team than the Rapids, that they had to play in the Rapids stadium and everything. Like, I would say, go to your ownership, go to your technical executive group. You had the option to say, hey, every other year we want to play in Mexico. They chose not to. That's your own damn fault, guys. So, so there's that variable, of course, as well. But I want to believe, Mark, you know, in 5-10 years time, if League Cup is still happening, if MLS teams are still dominating in League Cup, or are MLS 10 years from now, are MLS teams dominating League Cup as much or more than Mexican teams are dominating in Champions League, then that's the great equalizer for me. The big question I always had about Champions League, Mark, was if we didn't start until late March or early April, would we see something different? The fact that Liga MX teams were in form and MLS teams were playing on cold, hard, wintry pitches in, you know, anywhere north of Kansas City, and then having to then go out, that's difficult. And then MLS media and fans would complain about it or say, like, this is a real thing, we should acknowledge that. And Mexican media and Mexican fans were like, nope, you guys are ass, da-da-da-da-da, all of the Spanish words and everything. And now to be able to throw some of that back, and maybe somewhere in there with all of the coping and all of the trolling and Club America fans posting illicit adult content in our mentions on HTHL, which I've reported, by the way, and it's been deleted, to be clear, like, to have them maybe somewhere in their subconscious, it's like, huh, maybe they're right. Maybe when Seattle Sounders have to go and play at Toluca and it's their first competitive game of the new season and they get schwacked 3-0 because they're not conditioned to altitude and they're not playing in rain and everything, maybe that's reasonable. In the same way that maybe it's reasonable why Mexican teams aren't as well. And also, Mark, last thing that I'll say on the Liga MX crying crocodile tears and everything, it's so hilarious and so wonderful for me to see Mexican fans and coaches be so butthurt over a tournament that they claim isn't as valuable as CONCACAF, isn't as important as CONCACAF, and one that they're not taking seriously.
Yeah, I think a semi-related point is something I'm going to write a little bit about and hopefully post tomorrow, which is that I do still think there's some legitimate criticism about Leagues Cup, especially because of what you said at the very beginning, which is that it's four MLS teams and zero Liga MX teams in the semifinal. I don't think the format quite works. There's something missing that needs to be tweaked. I'm not sure if it's that opening round three team group that's a little hinky. If there isn't like some way, like ultimately what we are trying to accomplish is two things. One, a real competition between American and Mexican teams, North American or Canadian and United States teams and Mexican teams that feels like it means something, like it has weight, which already exists with CONCACAF Champions League, so to be fair. And two, to give American fans in the United States and Canada the opportunity to see some of the big Mexican teams in their home stadiums play their home teams. Mm-hmm. And those two things are unfortunately not quite aligned properly. They're incongruent, right? Because ultimately, if you want to have a competition where you progress through the stages from one match to another, at some point, an American team is going to play an American team and a Mexican team is going to play a Mexican team. Unless you do it in a different way, right? Like you just like somehow make a rule, and it's not impossible you could do it this way. I don't think it's going to happen, but you could make a rule that like there always have to be an even number of American and Mexican teams playing each other. And whenever there is a rejiggering for the next round in the next draw, the pots are the American teams and the Mexican teams. And that's how you frame the pots. It's possible. It would be a little bit inorganic, but if you're really trying to accomplish that, the reason that I say this, and this is worthwhile kind of diving down the MLS Reddit forums, if you're interested, is it's widely been reported that a lot of these games have had not super great attendance. Now, there have been games where the attendance has been bonkers and fantastic, and other games where it hasn't been great. Atlanta United's first round match did not do super well. Seattle midweek did not draw well, not as well as a regular Seattle Sounders League match would make. Like, it's not bad, but I think one of the things that's a complaint is like the format doesn't seem to be quite knocking it out of the park the way the league necessarily would have wanted it to.
Mark, did you see the reporting from World Soccer Talk earlier today?
So
I will put a link in the show notes to this, listeners. This is an article from Kyle Fansler. Apologies if I'm pronouncing that incorrectly. So, Mark, you know that some of the Leagues Cup games are still over-the-air cable on Fox, mostly on FS1. So if we compare the numbers last year in 2023 across the entire tournament, Fox was averaging just below, they were averaging like 100,000 plus. The most watched game that they had on FS1 was Club America against St. Louis, and that was 173,000. I don't think the final was on FS1 because they're not putting it here, and I have to think Messi playing, that would have been something. But so Leagues Cup so far for FS1 has been averaging right around 30,000, and the most watched game was Philadelphia versus Cruz Azul. That was 72,000 viewers, and then nobody else has been over 40. And there's been multiple games, Mark, that were under 20. Pachuca versus Tigres, two Mexican teams being broadcast on an English language platform, had 19,000 people. And then San Jose versus Necaxa was 14,000. There's a possibility, Mark, that San Jose game, there were more people in the stadium or more tickets distributed, if you will, than there were actually people watching on FS1. Now, there's a couple things going on here, listeners, is that Leagues Cup doesn't have as much juice because it's the second iteration of the tournament. Was the increased numbers that we saw last year because of the Messi effect? Are there more people watching on Apple TV rather than on cable? So are these numbers that FS1 had last year that just more people have Apple TV, so then they're watching on Apple TV, and Apple TV doesn't reveal their numbers in terms of viewership? They have reviewed some very preliminary, given us a general ballpark on number of subscriptions that they've had. So that gives us an upper bound that doesn't necessarily show us user rate, if you will. So that's a question that I have. And what we've seen from the attendance, Mark, clearly reflects that as well. So, you know, to your point, other stuff I think is going to happen. I think there's supporters groups that are wise to this and care about this from an Open Cup standpoint. There are some fans who I think are seeing this as a break to go do stuff in August before kids go back in school or before that the regular season comes back to it. And maybe the novelty is eventually going to wear off because it's cool when you play, you know, a Mexican team for the first time. Mark, if 4 years from now the Rapids are playing Toluca for the sixth time ever in Leagues Cup, I'm going to be bored of Toluca. Last thing that I will say about this game, Mark, and again, I'm going to be a bit of a Debbie Downer here. I'm going to try and keep this short because we've already rehashed it. Listeners, as you've seen, as we played and bleeped at the top of the show, Georgi Mihailovic said, up the effing pids, in a very, you know, candid, unscripted moment in which the camera and the broadcast was not necessarily expecting it. And then Chris Armas then said to a Rapids camera on the pitch, you know, why not the effing Rapids? Why not us? And so these were moments again where either broadcast rights holders or the league itself, because MLS tweeted out the video of the Georgie F-bomb, or the club itself have posted things of players or staff using profanity. And I could not help but think, Mark, when that was happening and that was going viral, of my good friend and guy who's been on the show and former contributor to Burgundy Wave, Joseph Samuelson. I'm not going to rehash that story in its entirety. If you know, you know. This is just another moment in which the club, and to a certain extent as well, the league and rights holders, are selective about when using profanity or displaying profanity being said by people who are at the club and are willing to amplify it and give it traction when it's something that is positive or is in celebration or could be seen as profanity in a positive light, but have been restrictive or tried to condemn it when they are not controlling the message or at least the initial distribution of sharing that profanity, or when that profanity makes the person who is using that profanity, who is swearing, displays them possibly in a negative light. And I have yet, and Joe has yet, to receive any confirmation or acknowledgement from anyone at the club about the hypocrisy, which we still stand by was certainly there. And is that because they don't believe that what happened there was hypocritical, or that their actions this past weekend with the two F-bombs is hypocritical to that? Or are they just being selective in their outrage? And that is just another element in which I think the club has, you know, has gotten a lot better. That's still an element where they have an opportunity, I think, to improve.
You can't, but the simple point is you can't glorify swearing and then in social media posts and then complain about reporters reporting about swearing.
Thank you. Thank you, Mark.
In social media posts. Yes. That's not fair. That's just not fair. And poor Joe Samuelson got schwacked with it a couple of years ago. And that's, but if you want to make that point, you should make that point.
Yes. So
you don't even need me to make it for you.
Yes. So that's something that's still, I'm over it, Mark. I've accepted the apology that I haven't gotten. I don't feel that I'm owed an apology. I feel like at this point, somebody could, it would be a show of good faith for somebody at the club to, I think, acknowledge that. And so there's just, it's another small little element where there's an opportunity for the club to maybe do the right thing or be the bigger person or just acknowledge wrongdoing or accept responsibility in ways in which they haven't. I'll put it this way, Mark. Joe voluntarily chose to step back from Burgundy Wave at that point. There was a point, Rabbi, where you and I were discussing internally asking him if he wanted to become the third co-host of holding the high line. He and his wife Blair did not come back to watch many home games the rest of that season, even though they had season tickets. They did not renew their season tickets for the following year. I just found this out. I noticed this recently, Mark. I believe he's either made private or his Twitter account is not viewable, and his Twitter handle is not him anymore. Listeners, I'm not sure if he's deleted Twitter or if he's become inactive because of something that Elon did or something. I don't have the details to that. That's not the nature of Joe's my friendship. That's not something I'm going to probe about him. This situation was stressful enough for him. One of the best things I can do as a friend is when I interact with him, not bring it up. But so I can tell you that the odds of him coming to a Rapids home game that would not be an MLS Cup final later this year are zero. The odds of him renewing his season tickets or coming back as a season ticket holder for 2025 right now are zero. The odds of him having any interest of contributing as a member of the Rapids community or member of the media independently for Burgundy Wave or HTHL right now are zero. And if the people who were involved in the club's reaction to his reporting of that preseason friendly against Hailstorm were to call him or contact him, acknowledge the hypocrisy of how the club is treating that profanity, all of those percentages go from zero to very not zero. And in that moment, is there an opportunity then for someone high up at the club to take 10 minutes to let go of some of their pride, accept some responsibility for something that's going to be a net positive at the club, but is maybe going to be admitting that sometimes the emperor has no clothes? Listeners, we've got a really great Ask HTHL. We're going to talk about that now. I'm going to pull it up momentarily. And this Ask HTHL comes from one Scott Keithy, K-E-I-T-H-E. Scott, I'm not sure how to pronounce your last name, and I apologize, but your Twitter handle is at Whitson underscore Baker. So in any case, Scott asks, is it too soon to start calling Armis our Coach Lasso in response to how much he turned the culture both inside and out of the locker room in comparison to how things were at Leeds? Hashtag Ask HTHL. Mark, do you want to take this first, or would you like me to go on my rant?
You go. You go first.
Okay. I've noticed this as well, Scott. I was making these comparisons. I was noticing them and noting them in my brain, I want to say as early as maybe even 2 months ago. I have not talked about it publicly. I haven't talked about it with very many people. I've been hesitant to do that. For those of you who don't know, there was a very dubious and incendiary report when Chris was an assistant under Ralph Raniak at Manchester United that a group of players or a portion of the locker room at Man U did not respect Chris or didn't think that he had the tactical nous to be where he was at Manchester United. How much of that was based on his credentials as a former coach in MLS? How much of that was based on the fact that he was an American? And so there was a report that some players had started nicknaming him Ted Lasso, referring to it in the negative way of, you know, a guy who doesn't know what the offsides rule is, that kind of stuff. The negative part of Ted Lasso being the head coach and manager of a Premier League team. Chris has denied this very publicly. There have been other people who are very familiar with that situation who have denied this, some who have even denied it to me when I've asked them about it for reporting on the hiring of one Chris Armis. So I am hesitant to bring this up because I know how important HTHL is in terms of the rhetoric around the Rapids community. And we know that Chris Armis listens to this show. So I'm fully aware of the possibility that right now I'm answering this question, not to answer you, Scott, not to tell our Highliners about it, but that Chris, you are listening to this and functionally I am saying this to your face, or that's how you're perceiving it. So I can understand, Mark, where Chris Armis would think that us comparing him to Ted Lasso only reminds him of that reporting about him on when he was at Manchester United, which he's denied, and that outlet that reported it, that I will not name, and I will not name the reporter who's involved in that, have posted other very gossipy, dubious things that have turned out to not be true or be somewhat suspect when it came to Manchester United. And Man U wasn't in a good place at the time, and that club is under a microscope. Like, you think some people, Mark, have complained about No One Good FC. You know, Erik ten Hag could be in a press conference and the mic could pick up him passing gas, and that would turn into a new controversy over the course of a 24-hour period on the red side of Manchester. But Scott, I absolutely see the connection. I think we see a deeply human individual. We see someone who has at least tried to portray a cult of personality around caring about individuals, being very thoughtful. He's reached out. He has relationships with individual fans. He has tried to give them the time of day, and he has been nothing but kind and courteous and respectful and professional with everyone that he interacts with, including when he does not immediately get that reciprocated. That is a very Ted Lasso, Hoopé, like, let's be nice kind of a thing. And then on top of that, how much he cares about the individuals who are around him and cares about their individual successes, even when it doesn't immediately contribute to his own success or success of the team. Mark, I don't know if you remember when Darren Yappe scored the goal and the entire team piled on. Chris Armas came down and jumped on that dog pile as well. I want to believe that when, you know, the Rapids haven't cut bait with a lot of players who Chris Armas was installed with the team as well. If Chris Armas is the person that he's led us to believe that he is, then I want to believe that when the Rapids move on from players and those players go somewhere else and they have success, that Chris Armas will see them as successful or think that he contributed to that or celebrate them in some way in that regard. I want to believe, Mark, when we had our last in-person press conference to preview a Leagues Cup game, it was last Friday, I believe, and I asked Cole Bassett and Chris Armas what they thought of the Premier League starting. And we know that Cole Bassett's an Arsenal fan, and then he also worked with Arne Slot when he was at Feyenoord, who's now at Liverpool. So I asked him about both of those two clubs, and I just open-ended asked Chris Armas what he thought about the Premier League coming back and could anyone beat Manchester City. And he responded by saying that Manchester United was his team and they had a really good end of the season and he's rooting for them and he hopes he does well. Mark, I can tell you right now that if, you know, the companies that I've been laid off before in the past, I'm not rooting for them to fail because I know that leads to layoffs of some of my more coworkers or anything, but like, I'm not actively rooting for them. I'm not happy with their successes when it happens after you laid me off because you did a bad job from a business development standpoint. Chris Armas does not have enemies. He doesn't appear to hold grudges. He's at peace with his time at Red Bulls and Toronto and the other clubs as well. And he's come here and he knew that the club gave him an opportunity when probably every other team in MLS would not. And he's been nothing but nice and kind. And he has built a locker room where people care about themselves and each other, and they celebrate each other in a way that is very organic, very kind. Mark, when Lawless Abubakar got his citizenship and he was walking through just to go to training and the entire team was lined up on the hallways, like doing a gallery of honor like situation with American flags and everything. Tell me that's not something that would have happened in Ted Lasso season 4 had Sam Obasanya gotten dual citizenship and become a UK citizen or something like that. That was something out of Ted Lasso. In that regard, for me, absolutely Scott Keithy. Chris Armas is absolutely the coach Lasso for the Rapids. What he has done from a cultural standpoint, improving the energy in the room, in the locker room, in the front office, in the press area, in the stadium, amongst the fan base as well, is a very Ted Lasso kind of a thing, when I'm pretty sure there was probably a Rapids fan who would have been willing to call him a wanker when he got hired because they didn't like that hire and everything. And in that regard, for me, he's Ted Lasso. And Chris, the next time I see you, if you hear this, if you want to be upset, if you want to tell me that that was something that was annoying to you or you didn't care for because of your time at Manchester United and some reporting, that's something I would be willing to give you an audience for. That that's something that I am willing to accept, and I'm willing to do that because I am the Trent Crim of the Colorado Rapids, and I'm willing to be that even if you're not ready to be Ted or you refuse to be him and you don't want him, and I will never bring it up if you tell me not to.
You're ridiculous tonight, Pat. Nice job. I love it.
Nothing else to add, Mark? Shall we move on to LAFC?
Let's preview a match.
Okay. Listeners, this coming Wednesday, August 21st, the Colorado Rapids will be playing in the Western Conference semifinal of Leagues Cup. I think that's what we're officially calling it. They will be playing at BMO Stadium against LAFC, a team that they've already played all the times that they're going to in league play. There was the 3-2 win at Dick's Sporting Goods Park. That was the Georgi Mihailovic free kick and Moise scoring on his birthday. And then the Rapids proceeded to lose 3-0 in the game at the bank. I can't remember when that was, but that was later on in the season. LAFC is a bit of a different team here, Mark. They still have Mateusz Bogusz. They still have Denny Bwanga, who are both very fantastic players. I would say they figured some stuff out defensively. For me, Mark, I think Hugo Lloris has gotten better. I still don't think that he is a goalkeeper of the year level, but he's had fewer howlers, and I think there's a much better setup that they have in what has been more of a 3-4-3 from Steve Cherundolo rather than a back four. So it's been Eric Long, Maxime Cheneau, who they got from NYCFC, and then Murillo in the back three. Ryan Hollingshead is still there, so of course he has to matchup against Keegan Rosenberry in the battle of devilishly handsome, bearded outside backs. And then the big acquisition from this summer so far, Mark, has been one Olivier Giroux, who is officially with the team. He was on the bench in the game against Seattle Sounders, Mark. So I don't know if that's him coming out of the Euros and where is he at from a fitness or a fatigue standpoint. How much of that was the fact that maybe he's still integrating in with the team? Let me see very quickly to see if Giroux ended up playing in that game. I know he's been available. Olivier Giroux subbed on for Kai Kamara in the 64th minute. So in any case, Mark, I feel pretty confident one of Giroux or Kai Kamara is going to start this game. And at some point, unless the scoreline is extremely out of hand from a game state standpoint, I would imagine the substitute subs in for the other one. So we will see former Rapid Kai Kamara up top getting balls from Bogush and Mwanga. And then at some point, we will also see Olivier Giroux as well. So that's been the one addition, the one change. Let me see, Mark, how many games he's played. So he would have played in, so he's played in two Leagues Cup games. So he was a substitute in a 4-1 win over San Jose. He played 19 minutes, and then he played 26 minutes in their quarterfinal against Seattle Sounders, which they won 3-0. So Olivier Giroux is a fantastic player, Mark, albeit one who doesn't score goals in large numbers, but he also scores big goals in big games. And if we don't have that to deal with, Mark, oh, by the way, it's only Kai Kamara, the second highest goal scorer in the history of Major League Soccer, and a guy who used to play for the Rapids, and he holds grudges, and he is a vengeful individual, and it is...
And Dennis Bwanga, who is the reigning Golden Boot winner, or is he the runner-up? I don't remember. But he won it last year?
He's a fantastic player, and he terrifies me, and he terrifies the Rapids.
Yeah. It's a lot of goals. There's a lot of goals up front for this team.
I know, and then the one thing as well, Mark, because this is something that I harped on for this fixture in league play as well. I think it's, again, worth pointing out where this is different, or there's familiarity here. The Rapids have had success against LAFC, but the BMO Stadium is a house of horrors, listeners. The only stadium that I feel worse about for the Rapids going to play at right now is Providence Park. The Colorado Rapids have played 6 games all time there in regular season play. They have lost all 6 of them, and LAFC has outscored them 17-2. So as much as we feel good, Mark, about the strategy and the run that the Rapids are on and the vibes in the camp being really good and them being really confident and feeling like they could make a run and they could win it, I could not think of a more fitting Sisyphean task, an impossibility, a thing that they will have to do that they have never done before, which is go play at LAFC and find a way to not get blown out.
My thoughts?
Yes.
My thoughts. This is a tough game, and we thought that we were going to lose the last game, and we were wrong, and I'm happy to report again, ladies and gentlemen and friends, that I am expecting us to lose this game, and hoping to be wrong, because this team has lived dangerously and been playing a little bit over their heads, and they've gotten good mileage and good results. They're a really talented team, the Colorado Rapids are, but they are about to face, an LAFC team that is clicking on all cylinders right now. You know, Bwanga, Ryan Hollingshead is still at the top of his craft as a left wing back. I mean, he is basically, people were giving me a hard time years ago when I wrote that Sam Vines was like, he originated this position. They were like, Ryan Hollingshead was doing this before Sam Vines had even made it out of high school. And that is a legitimate point. He's slowing down now, but he's still a really talented player. Eduard Atuesta is back with this team, and he is fantabulous. Ilya Sanchez has seemingly not lost a step in 2 years since he helped them win MLS Cup a few years back. Maxime Cheneau and Mario at the back and Aaron Long are about as good at center back as it gets. Matt, you've already regaled us about what Kai Kamara and the meaty French forehead of Olivier Giroux can do. It is an interesting question to ask, considering that Kai Kamara started the last match, if we shouldn't expect Olivier Giroud to actually start, considering he's came off the bench the last couple times. He may be past that time when he can really go a full 90, but maybe he can give you 45 or 60, and you want to start with him and just, start by lofting crosses up onto his head and make Lalas Abubakar go head-to-head with Olivier Giroud.
What Mark, you watched Giroud a lot when he was at Arsenal. I think
a ton.
The French,
like, the whole
national
year.
Team, him playing with Mbappe and playing the way that Didier Deschamps wanted, was very much set up for a club team. It was not maybe the same that it would have been under Arsene Wenger and then Unai Emery, and I don't know if there was someone else in there. What stood out to you from a style of play for people who've only seen highlights of him scoring in Serie A? What, when he's with a club team that, you know, emphasizes their winger play, as LAFC does, as Arsenal did at the time, what stands out? What's unique to him that could be problematic or that fans should look for?
You know, it's that he has kind of a worm quality to him, in that, like, he twists and turns a little bit and he tends to lose men. And he does it in a way that's very Chris Wondolowski. Chris Wondolowski was really famous for his double move, where he would kind of like feint one way and then go the other and then just split the center backs and then poke the ball into the back of that, typically with his foot. The other thing that that Chris Wondolowski would do is just kind of have a really good nose for goal, of just kind of like ghosting and then just like striking at the exact right moment, like a cobra, kind of like a Thomas Muller pop-up kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Giroud does similar things, but with his head. He also does similar things that Cole Bassett does, with that like late arrival, second gasp goal kind of thing that sometimes happens. But I think the really amazing thing is that he has this, like, my experience, my memory of watching him with Arsenal for a couple of years is that the ball would come to him in a position where he'd be like turned 45 or 90 degrees away from the goal. And you'd be like, it doesn't seem like your body should be able to contort itself into a position to lash the ball into the net from where you're at. But he would do it anyways, right? Like, he would find a way to twist. And he wasn't like, you know, you see these like amazing, like lithe little Brazilian dudes who do like a three-quarter volley or like an overhead kick, you know, Marcelo Balboa style bicycle kind of thing, in order to get that twisty turny ball in. Giroud wouldn't do that. He would just find a way to kind of like side kick it, or like power chest it, or like knot it down, or like thrash it with his knee. You know, he just was really, really good at using all of his body in the right place at the right time to do it. So you just can't, you know, you can't give him an inch. You have to mark him front and back. You have to recognize that if he's like 4 feet away from you, that he knows where the ball is going to be delivered to, and he's going to race into that spot. So it's a lot. He's a great player. He's an amazing player. Yeah, this is going to be a really fun match. It's going to be a really challenging match. We're going to have to bunker. The Colorado Rapids are going to have to bunker again. They really probably need to get a goal in this one, though. That would be my only last thing to say about the Rapids. I don't think holding on for a 0-0 is a great way to go. I think LA Galaxy, I think they've, Matt and I have seen them play every single game they've ever played against LAFC, which is kind of a cool thing. When, you know, you watch a team kind of expand into the league. Matt and I have seen every game LAFC plays against the Colorado Rapids. The Rapids have approached a lot of these games wrong tactically. They had games where they were like, we're going to come out aggressive and attacking. And they're like, whoa, that didn't work out so good now, did it? And, you know, like, it's a lot. I've also been, Matt, I don't think you've seen BMO on TV, but you haven't been there in person. I've seen two games at BMO. You are right. It is absolutely a thunderous environment. The 3252 are absolutely terrifying and intimidating, far more than Club America's, you know, fans, traveling fan base. I assume Azteca is pretty terrifying, but, you know, like, that's another matter. Anyhow, this is a high mountain to climb. I don't think the Rapids are going to do it. 2-0 to LAFC is my forecast on this one.
Yeah, I don't think the Rapids win this one either.
Which is too bad, because I want to go see him in the final, because I'm going to drive to it, but whatever.
Yeah, it was June 29th was that game at BMO, which the Rapids lost 3-0. Let me look up to see who the goal scorers were. Oh, it was the hat trick for Bogusz, of course. Now I remember it. I remember distinctly from the post-game media availability we had from that game, Mark, that Armis talked about how the team brought the right energy or the right intensity to the game, but that tactically there was kind of that disconnect. And we've seen that he's alluded to that before in these big games on the road against good teams where it doesn't necessarily go right. He mentioned it a little bit against FC Cincinnati. I don't remember him saying that in the loss to RSL in May off the top of my head. But so to that point, Mark, about how we're contrasting that game to this version of the Rapids that we've seen, you know, what, almost 2 months ago now. They've gone on a nice run. They've won some big games against some Mexican teams. And we've seen a very clear continuity between what the coaching staff wants, them having really good tactical ideas, and then having the players at a fitness level and then of a continuity chemistry level in order to execute it. So, Mark, actually, you know, is what the Rapids did against Club America, is that what Chris Armas was trying to have the team do on June 29th, back when they played at LAFC, and they just weren't ready for it, or they had to work through some kinks, or something else was going on? I think this is a team that is much better prepared to go into BMO Stadium and go into Bank of America, or Bank of California. I can't remember the name of the stadium.
It is BMO.
It is BMO now, thank you. To go into there, and actually, this is the best Rapids team that, this is the best form a Rapids team has been going into a game at LAFC. I realize I said this last time as well, and then the Rapids ended up losing 3-0. But so, you know, if the Rapids can do exactly what they did against Club America, and then maybe, you know, be a little bit tighter on the wings as well, you know, Mark, you know, Keegan had some, had a couple moments where he got skinned, but then was able to recover. Can he prevent those opportunities to begin with? You and I both still have concerns defensively about Sam Vines, or about opponents trying to attack at Sam Vines. So which side of the field does Denny Bwanga start on, and does he switch depending on what the Rapids are doing from a fullback standpoint? As you mentioned, Ryan Hollingshead versus Keegan Rosenberry is going to be another big battle, and one that you know, Keegan hasn't always won in that regard. But if the Rapids do exactly their game plan they did against Club America, but I think they bring it up to another level, I think they give themselves a puncher's chance. I think they're still going to have to rely on LAFC. If LAFC comes out with their best of what they're capable of doing at home, I don't know how the Rapids get a result in this game. I agree with you, Mark. I think the Rapids will need to get a goal in this game. I think we will need to see their best performance of the entire season, all things considered, in order for them to win this game. I think they are capable of doing that. I will agree with you in saying that they will not achieve that. This will be a 2-1 victory for LAFC, and the Rapids will score in transition in garbage time. So functionally, it will be a 2-0 game. The scoreline will reflect that LAFC was clearly the better team. I do think from a performance standpoint, this will be the least dominated that the Rapids have ever been at BMO. The underlying numbers will show that the Rapids were competitive in stretches in this game. They will clearly show that LAFC was the better team and should have won, as maybe Club America or Toluca fans would argue their teams should have beaten the Rapids before as well. So it'll come to an end there, and the Rapids will be in a third place game over the weekend, probably on Saturday, and probably at Philadelphia Union. Mark, anything else we want to say about this, or anything else Rapids related? No, let's land this plane. Listeners, you can follow us on social media on Twitter at @soccer_rabbi, at LWS Matt Pollard, and at Rapids96podcast. Send us your hate mail, League MX fans, at Rapids96podcast@gmail.com. Send us your questions, calling us the P word, adult content that doesn't have a warning, using the hashtag AskHTHL on Twitter. We're also on Facebook. You should check us out there. Rate, review, share, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and tell your super salty Mexican friend whose League MX team is out of Leagues Cup about us, and try and convert them into a Rapids fan. Listeners, TBD, we might see you next week before whatever weekend game the Rapids are playing, but if nothing else, at the absolute latest, we will see you next week to talk about what happened this week and preview Fish Sticks weekend as the Rapids are at FC Dallas as MLS play resumes. Up the fucking pits.
Let's go. Peace.